the plane or the and a tone and a tone a then there is this then there is this.
All right, listeners, you're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio, 93.5 FM, CJLY, broadcasting live from Nelson over the World Wide Web on www.kootenaicoopradio.com.
There is a cheer. The gnomes have learned a new way to say who.
All right, welcome. This is Fane of the Cosmos.
Infinite Moment.
I'm one of your hosts, Dustin Sunflower.
I'm another of your hosts, Reverend DeMuzzi.
And on today's show, we're going to have some really heavy-hitting interviews. But some of the news items is Bush smoked pot. We'll find out more about that in the show.
And we'll also be interviewing Susan Boyd. She is a professor at the University of Victoria, and she wrote a book called From Witches to Crack Moms, in which she makes a really good case that a lot of illegal substances really aren't that damaging to fetuses in the womb, and that, in fact, prohibition may be more damaging in some ways to the fetus. And we're going to talk to Chris Bennett. He's going to give us a little bit of information about the upcoming and highly exciting Entheogenesis 2 conference.
Oh, I can't wait. That's going to be awesome. We'll also be doing our kind of coverage we've been doing lately on cocaine and the ill effects of the purchase of it and just ill effects of cocaine on all levels.
And also we'll find out about a first grader who was caught with a bag of dirt that teachers thought was pot.
Oh, boy. Now, this weekend was kind of quite a bit of action going on. Myself, I went to the play Foreplay. We had interviewed Liesl on the last show, and I went and saw the play, and I've got to admit, like, I'm so kind of proud as a person in our community to have such high-quality thespians on our side. It's like, whew, it was awesome. And there was lots of fake smoking of gun. But my favorite quote was from Liesl's character, rock the gunj, right on the golf course. An amazing play, and I have no doubt in my mind that it'll probably travel quite a ways across the country because it's so stellar. I'm so proud. Like, it was such good quality. Then we had the Solomonic Sound System.
Walls, if such they be, are crawling with geometric hallucination.
The Solomonic Sound, I have made an appointment with the Kootenai Physiotherapy because last night I pulled my reggae muscle. It's located somewhere around the butt region, and it's from shaking your hips, and it was awesome. Such great DJs, great knowledge of reggae. And another thing, too, is that completely different from their last set that they did last time they were in Nelson at the Fluid. Just a completely different essence to it. Just loved it. And then today, I was at a Blessing Way for one of the uber activist women in the Kootenais, and it was a beautiful ceremony, beautiful woman, and there's like beauty and then there's pregnant, and she's just glowing, and there was lots of blessing and hugging and just the good vibes around bringing children into the world, especially in the Kootenais, because we all know why we're here, because it's a beautiful place to raise kids. That is for sure. So it's been a really amazing weekend. Lots going on. And I'm so glad that we have such a sweet-ass community here in the Kootenais, with culture, with love, with intention, with spirit, and with good herb. That just makes for the full experience. And there's a full moon rising right now. It was quite beautiful being on the lake and seeing it over the mountain today, even early afternoon. The moon the moon coming to birth, it seems, of itself out of the sky. So stay tuned. We have got a kick-ass show tonight. Like, we're doing a...
it's the first part interviews. Of a four-part series.
Yeah, it's the first... Yeah, we're doing a four-part series, Women in the War on Drugs. And because on this radio show, we've interviewed probably 90% of the people have been men. And the women, like this show, you will have your eyes opened, let me tell you. So let's go. We're going to listen to KRS-One, The Sound of the Police.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. Stand clear, done, man, atop. You can't stand where I stand. You can't walk where I walk. Watch out, we run New York. Policeman come, we bust him out the park. You don't like how I act. You claim I'm selling crack. Will you be doing that? I'd rather say see ya, cause I would never be ya. Be your officer, your wicked overseer. Your hot shot, you wanna get pops and be a savior. First show a little respect, change your behavior. Change your attitude, change your plan. There could never really be justice or stolen land. Are you really for peace and equality? Or when my car's hooked up, you know you wanna follow me. Your laws are minimal, cause you won't even think about looking at the real criminal. This has got to cease, cause we be getting hyped to the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Now here's a little truth. Open up your eye while you're checking out the boombox. Check the exercise. Check the word overseer. Like a sample, repeat it very quickly and approve for example. Overseer, 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 officer. From overseer, you need a little clarity. Check the similarity. The overseer rode around the plantation. The officer is on patrol in our nation. The overseer could stop you what you're doing. The officer will pull you over just when he's pursuing. The overseer had the right to get ill. And if you're void back, the overseer had the right to kill. The officer has the right to arrest. And if you fight back, they put a hole in your chest. They both ride horses. After 400 years, I've got no choices. The police, them have a little gun. So when I'm on the streets, I walk around with a bigger one. I hear it all day, just so they can run the light and be upon their way.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound. See it that way. He wanted salary. He wanted so it put on a badge and kill people face. My grandfather had to deal with the cops. My great grandfather dealt with the cops. My great grandfather had to deal with the cops. And then my great 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 great. When is gonna stop?
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the police.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the beast.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the police.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the beast.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the police.
Whoop, whoop.
Welcome back. This is Fane of the Cosmos.
And Dustin, you got some information about cocaine.
Yeah, I have an article here from the Observer, Colombia. For every gram of coke snorted in Canada, someone in Colombia will have to give their life away. Anthony Barrett of Cartagena finds hard evidence to back up appeals to end Canada's habit. Olinda is weeping. Her tears were hard to see through the large sunglasses she wears to shield her blind eyes and facial scars. The Spanish interpreter was trying not to cry. She explained in English what happened to the 19-year-old. 2 years ago, Olinda was helping her mother milk one of the family cows in the Colombian village of Santa Roca. As she ran to round up stray cattle, she tripped and fell. The ground exploded beneath her. I was dead. I was dead. I kept screaming until my mom came, but everything was dark. Olinda's right hand was ripped off her arm, her left hand severed from her wrist, her eyes destroyed, and her skin burnt.
What?
She had fallen onto a crude mine concealed in the soil. Such weapons are known as improvised explosive devices, or IEDs for short. But Olinda is a victim of a war that begins much closer to home. In the toilets of city bars and across the dinner tables of Nelson's hip middle class, 80% of cocaine snorted up Canadian noses comes from Colombia. The powder may be cheaper now than ever before, but as Olinda can testify, hundreds of thousands of innocent Colombians pay a high price for the lines of coke, increasingly deemed socially respectable. Cocaine feeds a brutal conflict here, fueling some of the most barbaric violations of human rights on the planet. This war is referred to as the Trail of Blood that leads from a line of cocaine to the 40-year-old conflict in Colombia. More than 23,000 people have been murdered in Colombia last year as a direct result of the drug trade. That was a good year. In 2002, more than 28,000 people died, almost 70 a day. Most are not traffickers or smugglers, but farmers or peasants caught up in the fighting between Marxist guerrillas, right-wing paramilitaries, and the Colombian armed forces. It is a conflict that has seen teachers, trade unionists, and human rights activists slaughtered in their hundreds. Last August in Arauca, three unarmed trade unionists were pulled from their beds and shot in the head by Colombian military. It was thought, wrongly, that they'd been giving arms to guerrillas. In Colombia, anybody suspected of siding with one group is the target for another. Trade leaders in Bogota drove with armed escorts in armored cars. In some ways, Olinda is lucky. She is alive. Many have been massacred in local atrocities, tortured or kidnapped, never to be seen again. Olinda does not know who planted the device that blew away her vision, but it was one of the Marxist groups that used drug profits to finance their fight against right-wing paramilitaries who themselves used the cocaine trade to fund their arsenals. When the Medellin and Cali cocaine cartels disbanded in the 90s, it was these two groups that stepped in to control the lucrative trade. IEDs are used by guerrillas not only to protect their military bases, but to secure their cocaine laboratories hidden in the jungle. This is where the coca leaves grown by the farmers are turned into paste, then mixed with alcohol and acid to create the white powder that you snort up your nose. When the guerrillas move on, they shut their labs but leave IEDs in the ground. To date, 4,400 people have been victims, and this is just a fraction of the human cost of cocaine.
Wow.
Now,
there you go. Blame it all on the coke, eh? It wasn't the guns or the war on drugs or all those millions of dollars going to Plan Colombia or all that stuff. No, it was the coke that made her foot explode. And
yeah. Yeah.
Not the landmine.
No.
No, it was the coke.
Yeah.
There's some logic for you.
What do you mean? You don't buy that argument that because it was put there for a cocaine laboratory that it didn't have anything to do with the coke?
No, I'm just saying that I couldn't snort so much coke that my brain would be numb enough that I would think that it was because of the coke that her leg got blown off.
Really?
Like exploding cocaine bombs? Like, were the bombs made from cocaine? Like, you know what I'm saying? They're blaming it on coke, not me. The article is. The article says this is the human cost of cocaine.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's you don't see that there's a human cost? You don't think there is a human cost?
I don't think. Are you serious? Or are you just trying to push?
No, buttons? I'm being serious.
Well, no.
Like, just, are you? Because you seem like you're fucking with the idea, and I'm like.
No. I think it's funny that they think that there's a social that there's a the cocaine is directly responsible for this when it's actually the war on drugs is directly responsible for her injury.
Yeah, the war on drugs, but it's like the profits that come from cocaine create the necessity to put in landmines and the necessity to kill people and massacre people.
No, it's not the profits. It's the black market economy. The black market economy is caused by prohibition.
Yeah.
So the chain of cause and effect that leads to this person being injured is
a result of prohibition. So can we say that prohibition increases the price of cocaine to such a point that it causes these things to happen? Like the prohibition creates such a high price for cocaine that people will kill, murder, plant IEDs, all that stuff?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, right on, man. Nice, you're on side. Thanks.
Okay, hey, why don't we go to a quick little tune or something, and we'll give Chris a call, and we'll get him online here.
Maybe you can do a couple lines of cocaine and not blame it on the coke.
This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of February.
Sorry, guys, we're just having some technical difficulties. Some of these, sometimes the CD player just will not play. So if you have CD play, if you'd like to donate a CD player to the studio, that would be really wonderful. These ones are just having some problems right now. So.
I've heard whispers about the financial support your government receives from the drug industry.
Well, the irony of this, of course, is that this money, which is in the billions, is coming from your country. You see, you are the major purchaser of our national product, which is, of course, cocaine.
On one hand, you're saying the United States government is spending millions of dollars to eliminate the flow of drugs onto our streets. At the same time, we are doing business with the very same government that is flooding our streets with cocaine.
Mm-hmm, see. Let me show you a few of the other characters that are involved in this tragic comedy.
I'm on the border of Bolivia, working for pennies, treated like a slave. The coca fields have to be ready. The spirit of my people is starving, broken and sweaty, dreaming about revolution, looking at my machete. But the workload is too heavy to rise up in arms. And if I ran away, I know they'd probably murder my moms. So I pray to Jesucristo when I go to the mission, process the cocaine paste and play my position.
Okay, listen, Juan Valdez, just get me my product before we chop off your hands for workers' misconduct. I got the power to shoot a copper and not get charged, and it would be sad to see your family in front of a firing squad. So to feed your kids, I need these bricks. 40 tons in total, let me test it. Indeed, this is good. Pass me a tissue and don't worry about them. I paid off the official.
Yo, it don't come as a challenge. I'm the son of some of the foulest, elected by my people. The only one on the ballot, born and bred to consort with feds. I laugh at fate and assassinate my predecessor to have his place in a third world fashion state. Lock the nation with 90% of the wealth and 10% of the population. A central intelligence agency takes weight faithfully. The finest type of China, white and cocaine, you'll see.
Honey, I'm home. Never mind when your bank account suddenly grown. It's funny, we're so out of this debt for this money we owe with ya. When have I told you that I had two governments overthrown to keep our son enrolled in a private school and to keep our tummy swollen? Come on, our fucking home was built on a foundation of bloody throats, the hungry stolen of their souls. Of course this country's running coke. I took a stunning oath to hush the ones who know. The CIA conducts the flow for these young hustlers that lust for dough.
I go work in the hood, hit my connect. That's what's really good, and supply work to the hood. These dudes fucking crack me up, scrutinize like we inferior. Petrified when we meet in my area. My dudes will shoot till I say so. You got the loot, give me the yay yay. Like ice cubes, so don't play with my yay yo. We won't stop you, you bastards. My street scramblers chop it and bag it.
Taking pictures and tapping phones, debating snitches and cracking codes. Fast the cuff or blast the foe on any hustler stacking dough. Just pump the crack a blow, and my overtime is where your taxes go. Or gain your trust, get you the hand, wait to us, cause we paid up front on the low with cameras taping you. Getting pop or wait, the prison sentences doomed. Make the collar to leave with two keys out the evidence room.
Went my fame, truck, boat, or plane, they watching you. You think you got work? They copping too. We control blocks, they lock countries and own companies. We had nice cars and sneaker money. Now it's players out there talking about they holding. With bunks in their house like they down south with windows open. Your dough ain't long, you wrong, you take shorts and soon. Feds will be up in your mouth like forks and spoons. So enjoy the rush, live plush off coke bread. Soon you'll be in a cell with me like Jenny Lopez. In the school I was a bully, now life is fully a joke. I keep afloat on a boat for Peruvian coke. Players do favors for governors and tax makers. Fat Quakers smoke crack and sex acts with bad mayors. The walls got ears, you big mouths probably scared. Not prepared to do years like Javier.
The story just told is an example of the path that drugs take on their way to every neighborhood and every state in this country. It's a lot deeper than the niggas on your block. So when they point the finger at you, brother man, this is what you gotta tell them.
I'm not guilty. You're the one who's guilty. The lawmakers, the politicians, the Colombian drug lords, all you who lobby against making drugs legal, just like you did with alcohol during the prohibition, you're the one who's guilty. I mean, come on, let's kick the ballistics here. Ain't no Uzis made in Harlem. Not one of us in here owns a poppy field. This thing is bigger than
Immortal Technique.
This is big business. This is the American way.
Okay, welcome back. You're listening to Kootenai Co-op Radio, 93.5 FM, CJLY, broadcasting live from Nelson, and over the worldwide mycelium on www.kootenaicoopradio.com. If you're one of the people down the Kootenai Lakeway, you're listening at 96.5 FM. Same with the beautiful villages of Argenta, Caslow, Ryandale, all you North Lake Enders. Glad to have you on board. And all the way down to Creston Way, East Shore, Boswell. We're so glad that you're with the Kootenai Co-op Radio vibe. So, do we have someone on the line here?
We do. We have Chris Bennett on the line. Talk to us about the Genesis 2.
Okay, here we go.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing?
Definitely. Good, good. Holy, I haven't talked to you for so long.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Holy.
That was the last Entheogenesis conference, I think.
How's Trinity?
That's Mark Richardson's kid, Mike.
Whoa.
Diva.
Sorry.
That's all right.
We got a large tribe. I got mixed up there.
There you go, no problem.
Right on.
So you're doing another conference this year, Chris, just like last year. Last year's was a pretty big success.
Yeah. And this year we've moved it up into the WAS Center at Simon Fraser University. So really excited about that.
Wow.
It's, you know, one of the world's or Canada's probably premier conference centers.
Nice.
And we've got a really good lineup again. We've got Dr. Michael Aldridge coming out to speak about cannabis and other entheogens and tantra and other in stuff. And Professor Susan Boyd coming to talk about her book From Crack Moms to Witches. Professor Carl Ruck and Professor Blaise Staples, two of the scholars who came up with the term entheogen, are coming out again to discuss the role of entheogens in the Cathar religion in medieval Europe, We've got a fella, Alan Piper, coming out to talk about the role of entheogens in Islam amongst the Sufis and stuff. So,
whoa, really? Amongst Sufis? Oh, wow. That's
awesome. He's a great researcher, too. He's coming over from England. And we got a Professor Francis Thackeray coming all the way from South Africa. And Professor Francis Thackeray is the academic who was speculating that Shakespeare used cannabis based on some of his sonnets. And then him and another professor, Nils Vandermeer, actually went to the Avon Trust where Shakespeare's pipes are kept and got some of Shakespeare's pipes and had them tested for cannabis resins, and they tested positive.
He's going to be on. Wow.
So the bard was puffing up in medieval England there. So pretty fascinating stuff, and really, really happy to bring this into Vancouver, you know, because it really, really, really puts an academic touch on the whole subject of the use of psychoactive substances.
What is entheogenesis anyways, like the idea behind this whole thing?
Well, the name itself is a mixture of entheogen, which is, as I mentioned, a term that was come up with by Carl Ruck, Blaise Staples, Jonathan Ott, and a couple other people. And it basically means a spirit created within, and it refers to the use of psychoactive substances when used for spiritual purposes by shamans and religious priesthoods, like, say, the old Soma priesthood of the Vedas and stuff, right? And Genesis is like the beginnings of religion. So we merge these, beginnings of something. And so we merge these two terms together to come up with something to kind of base the conference around, you know, last year. And we've just carried on with that same name this year. This year's theme, though, is from darkness back to light. And we'll deal mostly with the role of these substances from about the 4th century, when for a large part, these substances were driven underground by the Dark Ages. And their reemergence over that period up into our modern time, when they're coming back into the popularity that they once held in the ancient world.
Nice. So I remember entheogenesis last year. I loved it, by the way. Hats off, you guys rock. But, Luke Brown was there, and there's more than just entheogenics. Art and stuff. Is there a
great artist coming out this year, Roman, I've forgotten his last name here offhand.
Okay.
He does stuff very similar to Luke Brown's and Alex Gray, somewhere in between that kind of style.
Okay.
He'll be giving a presentation as well as having an art show, so we'll definitely be exploring that end of it again. And we had a pretty wild party last year. We'll definitely try to top that this year if we can.
Top it, wow. Oh, that's great. It was just packed in there, I remember, last year, and I imagine there's going to be an amazing turnout this year, and if people want to get tickets, they better get them soon.
They should get them soon because it sold out last year. It's a few more bucks this year because we've got the WAS Center, but that will make the presentations all the better. There won't be any audio problems, and we won't be dealing with some of the same problems that we faced in the basement of the BCMP headquarters. It'll be a lot more professionally run this time around, but we'll be once again having the party back at the headquarters where we can do what we do freely and then enjoy some of these sacraments.
So, Chris, Dustin, do you want to, before I sign him off, do you have any other questions?
I was just wondering, aren't you talking?
Oh, yeah, I'll be giving a presentation. I'll be talking about the, and so will Reverend DeMuzzi as well.
Who's that?
Who's that, yeah.
Thanks, Dustin.
I'll let him tell you about what he's talking about. But I'll be talking about the role of hashish in the 19th century and early 20th century occultism, and what a pivotal role it played in all that, with such figures as Dr. Pascal Randolph and Aleister Crowley and Louis Alphonse Hegnet and Helena Blavatsky and other like figures.
Wow.
That's cool.
Sweet.
Right. Also, now, if people want to get tickets, how do they get them?
You can check out the website, entheogenesis.ca, or you can call me at POT TV. It's a POT TV sponsored event, at 604-682-0039, and I'll hook you up. or stop by the BCMP headquarters. But details, everything about the conference, detailed description of the speakers' presentations, where it's going to be held, cost, all that can be found at entheogenesis.ca. Don't wait to get tickets. A lot of people were bummed out last year. We couldn't let them in. And we're going to have to be even stricter this year, being it held at the WAS Center. People without tickets just aren't going to get in.
Yeah, and I just want to stress again, this is like the world's premier event for, you know, the cutting edge knowledge about the use of illicit and, you know, euphoric substances in religious practice.
Yeah, well, we're really lucky that people are really keen to, there's even people like I'm thinking of that I didn't mention, like Michael Horowitz and Cynthia Palmer will be talking about women in the drug experience. Wow. And they were the curators of the Fitzhugh Ludlow Library. Martin A. Lee, author of Acid Dreams, will be coming out to talk about the role of psychedelics and fascism. And probably by the time the event comes around, we'll probably be joined by a few more luminaries. I wouldn't be surprised. And so many of these people, you know, they're just kind of coming out on their own dime and eager to share the information. You know, maybe we buy them a plane ticket and give them a hotel room. That's about it. And we're really lucky to have such great speakers at an event like this and people that are keen to share the information. It's information that people want to know right now, man.
Yeah, totally. Just the sharing that goes on between the people who are spectators, you know, the people who are just there to listen. Those people
are super knowledgeable.
Oh,
it was an amazing vibe last year. Amazing sharing of headspace, for sure.
Oh, man. It's like, it's a consciousness bubble when you're at the entheogenesis. Like,
I felt like the world changed afterwards. Like,
well, it did for some of us. We've got to make that a bigger experience, so for sure. We'll once again be filming all this stuff as well and posting it on Pot TV over the next few months after the event. So even more people than are at it. And the people that pay for the conference help to pay for all that filming and stuff like that. So it's really good biofeedback.
Yep. Please send some posters and stuff to the store.
Yeah, we will.
And
we'll
definitely pump it up. I mean, put us down for some tickets for sure.
I will, man.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay, take care, brothers. God bless everybody out there, man.
Yeah, love you.
Bye-bye.
And that was Chris Bennett, Reverend Chris Bennett, actually, also of the Church of the Universe, and he's the station manager for Pot TV, and he's throwing in Theogenesis for the second time, and Theogenesis 2 this year, featuring tons of great speakers, including myself. I'll be talking about, a little pumping myself up there. I'm going to be comparing the war against witches in the Inquisition to our modern drug war. And before we get Susan Boyd on the line, I just wanted to get back to that story about cocaine, because I think that we were both expressing very different kind of perspectives there. And I think we had somebody even call in and kind of say, well, hey, you know, I think that, you know, there's a very a strong argument there for ethical consumerism, which I think was the point that Dustin was trying to make. But there was just one line there that caught my attention, and that's the one that I was responding to, which was about, you know, it seemed like it was being blamed on cocaine. So I guess we were both kind of expressing different, you know, perspectives that I felt were both, you know, I think they're both important, really.
Yeah. Ethical consumerism is what I'm talking about. Cocaine isn't bad. What you put into your body isn't bad. Whatever you do is fine, but as long as you know what you're doing, what the consequences of what you're doing are. If you smoke pot from the Kootenays that are grown up in the hills, you're just supporting some family in the Slocan Valley or whatever in the Kootenays. I shouldn't even say one place. Anywhere in BC or Canada, you're smoking pot. You're supporting someone who's just a regular person. If you're buying cocaine, you're supporting George Bush. You're supporting the American covert operations. You're supporting coca lords all over South America who are maiming, killing, raping, mutilating children, women, villages, ecosystems, consciousness, tribal, you know, like there's, so it's ethical consumerism. If you're going to pick something that doesn't kill people, like herb,
yeah.
You know, like cannabis.
That's a really good point, you know. Although then, you know, we could take that to the ultimate extreme and say that, you know, that it'd be even better to just drink alcohol because, although, you know what, the thing is cannabis is a lot lighter on the system than cocaine is. But just from a purely social perspective, we could say, well, I don't know, you know, a lot of people go to jail for cannabis. Maybe, you know, sometimes people are shot during a drug raid. Maybe, you know, we shouldn't really support
the economy.
No, but
I mean, if you go to the base root of where it's produced, it's grown here. We don't have to, you know what I mean? There's no coca fields up the mountains here. Yeah. There's no poppy, you know what I mean? Like, it's a whole different thing. It's like bioregional drug use.
Yeah, well,
hey,
that's
guess
cool.
What? Pot grows here. Let's, you know, and alcohol, look who, if you're drinking alcohol, look who you're supporting. You're supporting big titties and bad commercials on TV and this kind of mass consumerism for schwill beer that ends up, you know, people dying in cars. And it's not like, alcohol isn't bad, but the corporations that you're supporting support all kinds of other things that you would know nothing about. They have their tidy hands in many pies. And when you buy their alcohol, you're supporting some pretty heinous stuff, including media manipulation, including all kinds of stuff.
There's some interesting things bound up in any form of consumerism, I guess. I mean, like, there are a lot of very innocent, you know, Colombian villagers just trying to get by, you know, making cocaine and, you know, trying to support their families, just as there are marijuana growers in BC. But yeah. then there's the hardcores, you know, in both of these industries. But there is a lot more warfare involved in the cocaine industry. I just can't feel right about placing the blame on the poor coca farmers who are just trying to get by and feed their families.
Hey, guess what? Those poor coca farmers have been chewing coca for 10,000 years. Guess how long we've been snorting cocaine? Well, about 30. Like,
yeah,
really?
It's only actually been created as cocaine, I think, just recently. Eh?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a whole different thing, but then there is a WHO report that came out that said that really snorting cocaine isn't that much worse than drinking a cup of coffee or a couple cups of coffee every day.
It's not, yeah.
So, I mean, it just depends. I think the amount of use, you know, what it's cut with, I'm sure there's all kinds of different factors. I'm not a cocaine user, so I don't know what they all are.
Right.
But yeah, very complex subject for sure.
And, how about when you buy coke? The vibe is different. You're killing people, and it's not bioregional.
I think knowing where you get it from, where you get anything from, anything that you consume from, is probably a really good idea. And trying to, you know, secure a source that's, you know, clean and uncontaminated from.
How about coca leaves?
Stuff
without chemicals, chemical extraction.
And, you know, you can, although it's illegal, you can buy it as a tea in certain specialty shops in Vancouver. So why don't we now go to
a tune and then,
yeah, let's do that.
Okay, I got a tune lined up. We've played this one on the radio show before, but it's just good all around. So we're gonna go Freestylers, and like, we're coming down heavy on cocaine, but it's because we love our tribe and we want our tribe to prosper and we want our tribe to be, like, karmically free. And it's... I don't want to think that us little happy Kootenai partiers are killing people in other countries. It just breaks my heart. When we can smoke the finest bubble hash in the world, we can smoke the finest herbs, we can do all these wonderful things that grow right here, but instead we are killing people in other countries. Maybe I've gone too far. Maybe I'm offending people. I'm just trying to put the idea out there that raise your consciousness. You know what you're buying. Know where you're buying. So we should roll with the song. Hey, is that what you're saying?
No. I just want to say one other thing, which was that, you know, it's funny because I just have, I guess, a slightly different perspective on it, is that I don't really, you know, think that we're so much supporting the problem. For me, the problem isn't so much that anybody who would use that cocaine, the white powder, would be supporting warfare. I feel like that's more of the U.S. government doing that. But what I feel is that by using cocaine, you're supporting the CIA, because the CIA sells most of that stuff. And I don't think that's a good organization to support at all.
No.
So, yeah, if you have anything, do you want to add anything?
That's totally it. It's where the money for cocaine, where does that money go? If you buy herb from the Kootenays, it's going to the Kootenays. If you buy cocaine, it's going way far away into some greedy American pocket for who knows what. And that money then gets used by the CIA to destabilize villages, to spray chemicals. We know Plan Colombia this year, they just increased from 40 military advisors to 80 military advisors. Military advisors advise countries on how to kill people and how to spray chemicals on their ecosystems. And we're going to cover this on maybe another radio show because I'm running out of time, but the U.S. government actually does actions around the world to drive up the price of cocaine. It's treated like a crop, like milk, like wheat, like dairy. And you better believe it. Out of the $80 billion that the American government spends on agricultural price fixing, cocaine is included. So this is a warning, and this is going out from the freestylers. And, yeah, I love my tribe. I love all the people in it. And so I wouldn't raise these concerns unless they were real.
Sending out a warning. Yeah, you may know star, 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 star.
1, 2, 3, 8.
Now this one dedicated to our massive sin. This one is a warning, but this one is a warning. This one is a warning, but if you listen to the warning,
come now.
This is a warning. They hold the captive, some of them are this with madness. Some of them like a terrorist. What a thing, you know, here you blaze up the district. They seal or it's clean. They keep on sitting up in the pain. Come on, never give a damn, I'm against some of the profit. Otherwise, they might look reflective the next trick. Why? How would they lick them muscles so supersonic? Well, they got the badness, and from your seven, a target, they had the warning. But this one is a warning. This one is a warning. Listen to the warning. This one is a 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 warning. This is a warning. The total mentality check. They have the lyrics to captivate them. They hold your interest. I never claim to be the best, but nevertheless, them can't test consciousness. I will left them speechless. Ooh, the world in a crisis. A sign of the time. Revelation and defensive, put on a seat, you must be blind. Political ideology, I'm to get left behind. They call the gender, but if they want to hear the bell chime, call the warning. But this one is a warning. This one is a warning. But if you listen to the warning, this one is a warning. But this one is a warning. This one is a warning. But this one is a warning.
Give me no sign.
Step up and take your best, best, right, best shot, shot.
This one is a warning. But this one is a warning. This one is a warning. But if you listen to the warning,
come now.
People get hostile, look at a man get savage. You give them a insecurity, come take advantage. But if you listen, then navigator impartial knowledge. Millennium is a decent and be carried the message into the warning. But this one is
is I wanted you.
Look, as soon as you come into this dive, I think you get held in this sort of amazing force-shielded temporal warp thing.
Welcome back. This is Kootenai Co-op Radio 93.5 FM CJLY, broadcasting live from Nelson and over the worldwide mycelium on www.kootenaicoopradio.com. And if you're down the lake, 96.5 FM Kootenai Lake. This is Fane of the Cosmos. I'm one of your hosts, Dustin Sunflower.
And I'm Reverend DeMuzzi, and we're back with Susan Boyd, and we're going to discuss her book, From Witches to Crack Moms, Women, Drug Law, and Policy. And let's get her on the line, Dusty.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
So, Susan, we were just talking about cocaine and its many socio-political aspects. Let's talk about some of its pharmacological aspects. Now, your book talks quite a bit. It gets into the use of euphoric substances by pregnant women.
Mm-hmm.
Is there evidence that cocaine is harmful for pregnant women?
There's not what you might call specific evidence that it's harmful. I think it's interesting to note that when we talk about cocaine, it has a similar impact on pregnancies as tobacco does, but we don't really hear anyone talking about tobacco babies. And I'll try to make this a little more explicit. Even last year, about 27 leading medical doctors and scientists in the U.S. wrote a letter to the media there asking them to stop perpetuating myths about crack babies and meth babies, and especially though the derogatory term crack baby, which relates to babies who have been exposed to maternal cocaine use. And they told them to stop using that term because it stigmatizes the infants, and there's absolutely no scientific validity to the term. And they also said that through almost 20 years of research, none of those scientists or physicians and researchers have been able to recognize a condition or a syndrome or a disorder that could be termed crack baby.
So the children were normal? Like
yeah.
There's nothing they could see in the children that would say, this is a crack baby.
No, there isn't. But what there is that we can see, and I think this is important, is that for poor women who are pregnant, they have poorer maternal outcomes than women who are not. And what we see with children that have been exposed to maternal drug use, occasionally what we see is higher rates of low birth weight, sudden infant death syndrome, prenatal death, and preterm deliveries. But they're what we call nonspecific, because we see that same high rate in poor women and women who smoke cigarettes. So you can't separate and say, oh, this is due to cocaine, you know, or maternal exposure to cocaine. Mostly you can say is that we see this outcome for women who are poor, for some women who use cocaine who are poor, for women who smoke cigarettes and are poor. You know, so it's not a specific effect. And that's very different. If you think about children who may be exposed to narcotics, There's one specific effect, and it's not all children, but some children may experience withdrawal symptoms because they've been exposed to heroin or methadone or codeine, you know, all the narcotics. But not every child does, but you could say withdrawal is specific to the drug. But there isn't something specifically related to cocaine, though we do see these, you know, for poor women anyway, these higher rates of low birth weight, preterm deliveries, perinatal death. And some of the research suggests that there's what they call vasoconstriction, and that can lead to sort of miscarriage and early, you know, preterm babies as well. But we see that with tobacco too. So you see, it's not so clear-cut what the effect of a drug can be. It's not, you know, similar if we have a drug like thalidomide, which caused terrible abnormalities in children. We could say that was specific to that drug. Well, you can't do that with cocaine.
So before we get into more of the issues and stuff surrounding pregnant women and drug use, your book briefly addresses witches as well. And even before I talk about that, I wanted to say, now you're a professor at the University of Victoria, right?
Yes.
And a lot of the, I guess the positioning in this book, the sentiment in this book strikes me, and just from what I've talked to you about too, I know that you've done some amazing things for people, and that you align yourself strongly with sort of a feminist politics, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Is it? Have you found that other people who align themselves in that way, that they may criticize you for your position on pregnant women and drug use?
I think early on that was the case. You know, we could say that in the 1970s, 1980s, you know, because most of the sort of heavy-handedness around women and drugs really took off in the mid-1980s, though there was lots going on beforehand, but it wasn't as public, you know, in the media and in movies, you know, sort of in the public imagination the way it is today. But when I first started writing about this, feminists and other critical writers did, you know, they did criticize me. And I think they hadn't really investigated that the whole maternal drug issue could be a construction in itself. And basically, we talk about, well, women need treatment, you know, that we need to do these things for women, but didn't really investigate the term needle-nadle abstinence syndrome or fetal alcohol syndrome, all of those constructs to see what they were really about. And so my work was one of the first to sort of explore that in a larger way and to really, you know, what I wished to do was to bring attention to what was happening to those infants, but also to what was going on with the mothers, because of my work here in Vancouver and seeing firsthand when I was working as an outreach worker, you know, moms having their children taken away from them, apprehended and put into the hospital and treated for neonatal abstinence syndrome, and most of those children were permanently apprehended. So I wanted to bring that, you know, what I thought was a terrible practice to the public. But I guess I could say that there has been a lot of change, and now there's a number of feminist activists who look at maternal drug use in the same way as I do. Lynn Paltrow in New York, who's the head of the National Advocates for Pregnant Women, she's just a champion for women who have been charged with maternal drug use and criminalized in the United States due to their activities during pregnancy.
Wow. So your work covers, like, I'd like the listeners to understand that your work covers a broad issue that this comes under, and that is the use of these kinds of terms as crack babies and women who don't take care of their children, and this has kind of the continuation of the patriarchal dominance of mm-hmm. women and the patriarchal to bring women down and to make them the focus of you know, we don't do these things with fathers. And that, if you could just comment on that, you can.
Well, one of the things I started, the first book I wrote, it was called Mothers and Illicit Drugs, Transcending the Myths, and part of that was I wanted to, you know, make public what was going on with women, how they're regulated through the medical profession, through criminal justice and through social services, and how that regulation overlaps and even competes with itself. And so it really places women in a very vulnerable position. And that regulation is quite different than it is in relation to men. I'm not saying that men aren't arrested for drug charges. They are, you know, and they are regulated in drug treatment in prisons. But with women, a lot of the focus goes around whether or not they're good mothers, whether they're fit mothers. There's a lot of focus around the regulation of their sexuality, whether they're abiding by their proper gender roles, you know, being the good girl, the good daughter, and then on to good mother. And so I saw that there were these specific differences, especially around apprehension, because most children that are apprehended from poor families, and most of those families are single-parent mothers. So I wanted to look at those gender differences. But in my second book, From Witches to Crack Moms, my question was, I think it was more historical in the sense that I wanted to trace back how women were regulated, and when did that start, and when were the first drug scares that marginalized women in a specific way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just started to go back in history and went as far as the witch hunts, because that was the first sort of drug scare that I could find in sort of a Western context anyway, where women's independence, their sexuality, reproduction, the herbs that they took, the medicines that they used became suspect. And women were, you know, we know now, you know, persecuted and
demonized.
Convicted and demonized. And, you know, a lot of those women were sort of the political dissenters, the midwives, the healers of their communities. And it's interesting, the witch hunts. I mean, men were also persecuted during that time as well. But about 80% of the people who were convicted and then executed were women.
Yeah.
And so if we look back, too, at The Witch's Hammer, which was a book that two Dominican monks wrote in the 1400s, It specifically talks about the witches, and it completely sexualizes witches and the fear that they had about women's power and their use of herbs. And they were really quite upset that any type of healing could happen during pregnancy or birth, too, that, you know, women should suffer during birth, and that anyone that helped them in any way, you know, would be seen as a witch.
Well, I think they were even excommunicated, weren't they, temporarily for a certain amount of time after giving birth?
Oh, I don't know about that, but that's interesting. I wouldn't doubt it from, you know, reading The Witch's Hammer and other historical work around that era.
And I think that's why the you know, it was considered so dirty that, you know, that the church doctors couldn't involve themselves in this work. So that's why the midwives had to step in. There was nobody else to do this work, and they had to come in and do this.
Yeah.
For the women.
Yeah.
And
that's right. And we have to think about it, too, that the medical profession, it's a fairly new profession. I mean, they've been around for centuries, but they weren't available to most people. I mean, women in rural areas and poor women, they didn't have, you know, access to doctors the way that we do today. And we can see that with the witch hunts, there was this marginalization of women in the healing practices, as well as a, you know, a criminalization of the types of herbs and medicines that they used. And slowly the medical profession, you know, gained prominence. I mean, we look today, we have alternative medicines, but they're still marginalized to a large extent. You know, even the midwifery movement in Canada, I mean, it's, midwifery is legal,
but it's highly regulated.
Yes, it's highly regulated, and most births are still in the hospital with a doctor. Not that you can't have your child in the hospital with a midwife, you know, that where they practice as well.
Yeah.
But it's just to say that they've still remained marginalized in relation to women's reproduction and